ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, B-Mac behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Plenty to get to today. Everybody's having these hot takes. Oh, yeah, Philly's defense looks good. Give me Jonathan Gannon. 49ers defense looks better. Give me D'Amico Ryans. That Eagle offense doesn't look bad. Let's have Shane Steichen as the head coach of the Houston. These hot takes are funny. How was your weekend, though? We'll start with that.
It was fine. It was fine. Lots of family time, lots of football, but it was good. I mean, I didn't really care for a tweet that you sent and tagged me on. But
have some fun.
Then
have
we some fun. Realized that karma's a bitch and things come back to bite you sometimes.
Yeah, I did get got by karma. There's
felt
no doubt about
yesterday
that.
I was listening.
I'm not. I don't overreact to a win or loss in late January. But yeah, for people who have no idea what we're talking about, there was a tweet on the on the Twitter.com by Barstool that said, since the Packers aren't in the playoffs,
let's
celebrate
the last
10 years
in playoff history.
Yeah.
Which there are plenty, and I'm very well aware of.
I was looking out for you. I said, please nobody tag at Pac-Man
as
Joel.
You tag
I was just looking out for you. I mean,
so
there's two ways you can take about it. There's two ways you can take
me.
It. There's two ways you can take it. The negative way that you're taking it, say, oh, yeah, he was trying to bring it on my, put it on my table, bring attention to it. Or the positive, like me, that was trying to protect you from that. Hey, guys, nobody show this to Pac-Man Joel. I was trying to look out for you. But if you do take it the negative way, which you are.
Me, I never see it.
I know.
Yeah.
I do
see?
Know that. Yeah. But yeah, I got by karma as the Cougars lost basketball yesterday to Temple. You know that loss to Temple yesterday dropped the Cougars in the NCAA net rankings all the way down to number one. They dropped the Houston Cougars in the KenPom all the way down to number one. It'll be okay. All is well in Cougars.
I don't want it to cost them the number one overall or a number one seed. But
yeah.
You know, you have no one to blame but yourself when you missed 10 free throws and your shooting percentage was just very abnormally low.
We were talking about that a little bit out of the bullpen. I don't care about seeding.
Right.
I'm not one that cares. Like, matchups are way more important to me than if you're a one seed or a two seed. Last year, the Cougars were right there in the Elite Eight, and they were a five seed. Like, to me, seedings don't matter. It's more about the path and the matchups to get there. But, yeah, I got by karma. Another Branham foot and mouth. I'm willing to admit it.
Penicillin. You'll be fine.
The overreactions that we've seen, though, in this coaching search is wild. You know what it reminds me of, to be quite honest with you, to go back to college basketball?
Okay.
This is whenever a team from, like, the MEAC gets hot and they, like, crush through their conference tournament, and then they pull an upset, like as a 14 seed, and maybe they even pull up another upset and go to the Sweet 16, and then all of a sudden that dude who's the head coach maybe never has won ever again. Maybe has never won before. Maybe he's only been to the NCAA tournament one time in 20 years, and then everybody wants that guy to be the head coach of their college basketball program. I saw the same thing all week. Oh my goodness, did you see Jonathan Gannon's defense? Oh my goodness, did you see Shane Steichen drawing up that play? Did you see D'Amico Ryans draw up that play yesterday that led to an interception? The overreaction that we're getting for one singular play, one singular game in the postseason because the Texans have an open position as their head coach, it's just too much for me, Blank.
See, here's the thing, Jeremy. The biggest problem I have is I don't know if fans want D'Amico Ryans for the right reasons. I feel like the fans here that want D'Amico here, it's because it's a name that they know. Because as a player, they loved him. Because he was part of that, some of that golden era of Texans football. And I feel like that's the main thing that a lot of Texans fans, the reasons why they want him to be their next head coach. Instead of digging deeper to say, look, I want him because he's energetic. He's a leader of men. He was a leader of men when he played. Now he's the leader of men the way he orchestrates one of the best defenses in football. Now, it helps that he looks good because they look good because they're loaded on defense. I look more at the deeper dive to say, hey, look, a head coach is going to be a CEO, so you need a leader of men, and you need a guy that can make tough decisions and a guy that can command the room and get the respect of his players, and I think he has all of those things. But I think that the reason why he has kind of come to the forefront as the got-to-go-get kind of coach for the Texans is because everybody knew him as a player. I don't think anybody knows him enough as a coach yet. And to me, I still want an offensive-minded head coach, but if DeMeco is the guy, I could live with it.
Yeah. We'll get into that a little bit later, a little bit greater detail about DeMeco Ryans wanting him for all the wrong reasons. Jay Glazer, who is works with Fox,
yep.
He had the quote yesterday, and I want to read this tweet, and he went on the Fox pregame and talked about this as well, and I'm not sure how to react out of this, to be honest with you, because I saw everybody, oh, he canceled all these meetings. He must want to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. It could mean that. Could also not mean that. Jay Glazer tweeted, 49ers defensive coordinator DeMeco Ryans had 4 head coach interviews lined up yesterday, got through the first 2, Broncos in person, and Texans via Zoom, then canceled the other 2 remaining, Cards and Colts, so he could spend the rest of the day working on today's game versus the Cowboys, more on NFL Fox. He basically just read the tweet on air. The reason that he canceled the other 2 remaining interviews, because Jay, this is what Jay Glazer's reporting, was so he could focus on his
game. He's got a job.
So he could focus on his game. I saw a lot of people selectively cutting the video on this to kind of make it seem like DeMeco Ryans loved the Houston Texans and banged the other 2 interviews because he wanted to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. Maybe it could mean that. It could mean that. It could also mean absolutely nothing. It could also mean that he lines up interviews with the Cardinals and Colts today and that Jay Glazer saying canceled isn't exactly true and it was more of a postponement. Time will tell. It could mean something. It could mean that DeMeco Ryans was blown away by the Texans, and I do like the fact that DeMeco, like the Texans were on the interview list and not the other 2 that did not get the interview. Now, I still think that he's probably going to interview with the Cards and the Colts, right. But I feel better knowing that he did finish an interview versus not finishing an interview. So I'm not going to just say it's a complete nothing burger, but it potentially could be a complete nothing burger. Look, it could be DeMeco Ryans loved the interview. He says, you know what, I'm going to be the next Houston Texan head coach. But it could also equally mean that he was just trying to prepare for the game. He's going to meet the Cards and the Colts, and he's not going to be the head coach of the Texans. People running with this is wild.
Here's how I'd look at it. If he had any say-so in the priority in which he met with teams and he met with the Texans, that would mean more to me than everybody making such a big deal out of this. Because I think more than anything else, when I heard Glazer's report and I started to really think about it, it was, I didn't realize how long the process is going to take of these interviews. And I think that after he knocked 2 out, he was like, there's no freaking way that I'm going to be able to do 2 more today and still be able to do what I need to do to prepare for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. And so he cut it short. I don't think he offended anybody. I don't think he prioritized anybody and said, well, these are the 2 teams that are going to get screwed and I'm not going to talk to them this weekend. And I don't think any team took it if they were the ones that got the interview or the ones that got, you know, postponed to say, well, now he doesn't want us. So I don't think the fans should either. I think it's more so a basic realization that these interviews take a lot of time and energy when he should have been, and rightfully so, focused on the job that he is being paid currently to do.
It could mean something. It could. Like, it could mean that he was blown away by Caserio and
Cal. I think prioritizing the teams that he met with, I think, now, you might have,
maybe.
I think that would be part
of it. But there's no way of knowing for sure.
Right.
Like, the reason that he canceled wasn't because he was, and maybe he was blown away by the Texans, but he didn't cancel or postpone those meetings because he fell in love and was willing to accept the job right there, right then. He canceled the meetings because it was late in the night and he wanted to get some sleep before the 49ers played the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Like, the overreaction to specific things this weekend, I think, was the biggest takeaway from a Houston Texan perspective, at least locally. And we'll get to all the NFL playoff matchups throughout the show because, like, that's the obvious lead nationally when you look at the NFL and the divisional round of the playoffs. But I was seeing it after every single game, Blankers. Like, the Saturday game, okay, you know, we're looking at some matchups here. Yesterday, you had the Cowboys and the 49ers. So that was like the last impression that you could have on one of the coaches' search. You had the Bengals and the Bills play before that, and you're not really interviewing any of those. The Chiefs and the Jags, you're not really interviewing anybody there. But I saw so much reaction going into the Giants-Eagles game. Okay, this is our chance to see Mike Kafka. Oh my goodness, they used 2 running backs in the backfield. Could you imagine the Texans doing that? It's wild. And then the Eagles thing, I had people telling me, oh, look how he handled that game against the Giants. Look how he game planned. He held the Giants to 7 points. I'm starting to feel better about Jonathan Gannon as my head coach for the Houston Texans. Your opinion of these guys should not have been influenced by one singular football game this past weekend.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because we've learned over the last 2 years one thing that basically blows that theory of what have you done for me lately out the window, and that is that you have to be a leader of men, that you have to understand time management and clock management and when to challenge and how to, you know, lead your locker room and your meeting rooms as and your practice field, as well as what happens during the game itself from the standpoint of whichever side of the ball you specialize in, the plays you call. And I think that it's all fine and dandy to say, hey, look, well, you know, all the coordinators that the Texans have talked to are still in the playoffs. Now, that's something you can focus on at least. But that's, of course, the reason why that they became the hot commodities on the market in the first place, because they're with really good teams under really good head coaches that have impressed people. So they feel like, again, that's where you get the expression of under the tree of certain coaches. That's why you're not getting guys under the tree of coaches that suck. So part of the reason why these coaches are successful, they made the playoffs.
Yep.
But you also have to go digger. You have to dig deep too, and take a deeper dive into looking at things like, hey, when I look at this, who's calling the plays? You know, like that's why I keep going back to Philly with Steichen. Look, I know that he calls the plays, but we know Sirianni's an offensive guy. So how much of the game planning during the week and the real elaborate details is a combo? Is it Sirianni or is it Steichen? And on the flip side of the ball, Jonathan Gannon has, just like we said about D'Amico, he's got so much talent on that defense that it takes a little bit away. Now, yeah, what you call and scheme up, those are big things, and that's sure. Where he is in control. But as we said, too, we have Eagles fans, multiples, that have said, if you take him, we'd be happy to see him go. And that says something, too, because the best teams that you're, you know, whatever your favorite team is, when you have a coach or a manager, and in this case, when you know, like, if I'm a Packer fan and I know that, you know, our defensive coordinator, not this year for sure.
Are you questioning your allegiance to the Packers?
No.
You said if I'm a Packer fan.
I'm just saying, hypothetically, if you're a fan of a team and everybody knows that I'm a fan of the Packers. Okay, if I was a fan of the Texans defense under Wade Phillips, but I don't want to lose Wade Phillips. Because I know that Wade made a difference when he came in, and sure, they drafted JJ, but then suddenly the defense wasn't as vulnerable. Yep. Well, that's what you want to hear from Philly fans. But if Philly fans say, if you take Jonathan Gannon, we'll be ecstatic. Well, I don't want to hear that.
You also have to be realistic about the opponent. I know everyone was hyped up on the Giants because they put up 1,000 points on the Vikings the week before, but the Vikings defense was terrible. And name me one relevant wide receiver on the Giants roster. I mean, the leading target guy on the team last week was Richie James. Layton. I mean, it's not a loaded wide receiver group. It's Daniel Jones and the Rona in a tough environment against a good defense with no wide receivers. This is kind of the outcome we should have expected.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can look at that talent on that roster and start bringing up some things. You can have some tough conversations. Like, it's just, to me, you put way too much stock on one team and how they look in the postseason. Biggest takeaway there. I like how you're sliding Wandale Robinson, the only wide receiver that, you know, Will Levis ever had at Kentucky. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3777. There you go. Proving my point. The greatness of Will Levis.
Who's the guy they overpaid to Detroit that basically hasn't been a part of their offense all year?
Kenny Golladay.
Yeah, Golladay.
713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Which candidate did the best job this weekend, even though it's silly to even discuss? Do you feel better about these candidates now that you got a chance to watch them on display in a divisional round playoff game? Also, some reports out of Sean Payton's camp. If you're a Sean Payton to Houston guy, you're not going to like this. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I met Dusty yesterday. Dusty Baker was at the game, came over, talked to, he was looking for me, but he ran into the Big E, Elvin Hayes. Mm. But yeah, I mean, they stood around, talked for 15, 20 minutes. Gary Pettis was with him.
That's awesome.
Shook Dusty's hand, congratulated him on winning the World Series. And if I've told you once, I've told you a million times. In Dusty, I trust
him. Did you tell him you were his biggest fan and
I didn't say
stop
I was
singing his praise all
I
year?
I mean, I congratulated him on winning the World Series. Okay. But yeah, I mean, Dusty and I have been on great terms since like last September. Dusty and I were on great terms like in last September, and I thought he handled the playoffs great and completely won me over. And Dusty, I trust him. Mm. Happy he's back. Love that guy. He's a good dude, man, for real. Like, okay. He's a really good guy. Very easy to root for a Dusty Baker, who's the manager of the Astros. Texans are looking for that type of dude, looking for a head coach. We saw D'Amico Ryans firsthand. We saw Mike Kafka firsthand. We saw Shane Steichen firsthand. We saw Jonathan Gannon firsthand. Nick Sirianni had some good things to say about Jonathan Gannon. We'll get to those in just just a minute. I think it's silly that we're looking at these one games and like envisioning what that guy is going to look like as the head coach of the Houston Texans. Oh, yeah, look at that game plan that Shane Steichen put together against the New York Giants. How about Jonathan Gannon game planning for the New York Football Giants? How about D'Amico game planning for Rain Dakota Prescott, who looked terrible? And then, oh, yeah, I want that guy to be the head coach. But which of these coordinators do you think did the best job this weekend, the worst? Does it even matter in this search?
It really does. It doesn't matter. I mean, to answer all questions right off the top, it doesn't matter. Like, they're doing their jobs, and there's a reason why they have the jobs that they have currently, because they're good at their jobs. Now they're looking for a promotion with a whole lot of different responsibilities that go with a bigger, better job. So, yeah, that factors in. But we already know that Lovey was a longtime defensive coordinator. We already know that Cully was an assistant coach for 16 years. There are things that you don't know until you get the gig. Or you can prep all you want for it, but until you get the gig, there's really no telling how well you're going to handle all of it. So it's good that these guys are having success. It's good that they're good at their current jobs. But as it relates to what they can do, the thing that's just mind-boggling to me is the people that are going overboard on all of these coordinators on the offensive and defensive side and the success they've had, including this weekend, the Texans don't have the same roster. The Texans don't have the same talent pool to pick from. So you can tell me till you're blue in the face how great they did this last weekend. Well, guess what? D'Amico's a lot different if you don't have Fred Warner and Bosa and all the guys that you have on that defense. Yes. And the same thing with each guy. That's, you know, depending on, like, you know, he doesn't, you know, Steichen doesn't have Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown and all the guys, Smith and all the guys that they have on offense. You can go back and every single guy and go, so don't go overboard.
D'Amico, I mean, completely agree. I think you said that incredibly well. It took the words out of my mouth. If I had gun to my head, had to answer this question, Kafka didn't look good with the Giants. They scored 7 points against a couple of candidates from the Eagles who are both coordinators there. What I saw from Shane Steichen's, what I've really seen from Shane Steichen all year long, so like that didn't really influence me one way or the other. D'Amico Ryans has coached the top-ranked defense in the league all year long. What they did against Rain Dakota Prescott doesn't really influence my opinion about D'Amico at all. The only one that I feel better about, quite honestly, forcing me to answer this question, is Jonathan Gannon. I do feel better about Jonathan Gannon today than I did last Friday. Now, I will hesitate to say that if the Texans put together this bells and whistles, dog and pony show of a coaching search, oh yeah, we're interested in Peyton, even though he's going to call your franchise dysfunctional, and there's some evidence that the Houston Texans potentially have admitted to what Sean Payton said to Colin Cowherd directly, but not publicly, was true. We'll get into that a little bit later. But D'Amico Ryans, of what is left, now that Ben Johnson took his name out of the hat, has been my top candidate. He has not moved off of that. He is still my top candidate. The only thing that has changed is we talked about this last week. Kafka and Steichen, to me, have been kind of going back and forth. They've been tied in a lot of ways. So I'll jump Steichen over Kafka because of that performance, if I must have to answer. Jonathan Gannon, still, I think the whole thing would be an illusion. I think that the whole coaching search would be a bluff to make the Texans fans think that they were really caring this time around. Look at us, top of the market. We're interviewing all these guys. And now that D'Amico has gained so much momentum, if they pull Jonathan Gannon out of the hat, they're telling you that they were bluffing the entire time throughout this coaching search. So really, my opinion of this hasn't changed at all. Here was Nick Sirianni defending his guy, Jonathan Gannon, defensive coordinator for the Eagles, after he put that masterclass game plan together that held a mediocre offense to 7 points.
This guy is an unbelievable coordinator, but the fact that he doesn't get respect from our radio station blows my mind. It blows my mind. And I know you work at the radio station too, so I'm not even going to say anything about you. But, like, it blows my mind. This guy is an incredible coordinator. The people love to play for this guy.
Make you feel any differently about Jonathan Gannon?
No.
Because a lot of people quote tweeting this talking about, oh, look at this, Jonathan Gannon, leader of men.
Let me give you the same kind of analogy with someone different. It's the same reason why Andy Reid did the same thing for Eric Bieniemy, and then kept talking about his play calling and all the different things that he does, and then eventually gave him more play calling responsibilities. Although if you watched yesterday, it looked like Andy Reid was calling the majority of the plays. But it's the same way Andy Reid did for Eric Bieniemy what you just heard. Okay? And that's what every good head coach is supposed to do, because it makes him look good too. He hired Jonathan Gannon. He put Jonathan Gannon in that position. So it gives him a little extra credibility, too, when his coordinators do their job very well. But does it win me over? No, it certainly does not. It's just the one thing that scares me is that because he had two interviews last year with the Texans, they know more about him than anybody other than probably D'Amico. And basically all that they know about D'Amico was based on when he played here. So you can easily push those two guys to the top of the list. Vegas has been pushing Gannon as the favorite for the last week.
It's flipped now. D'Amico is now the favorite.
Is that right?
Yep.
Because here's the other thing. It takes two to tango. Now, we had initially heard that D'Amico was not interested in interviewing with the Texans. And then he was. And then he did a Zoom interview. So when you hear all those things, at the end of the day, they may want you, but based on what everybody else has seen, maybe other teams want him too, and he could sit back in his big chair and go, I know I played there, I know the city, I know the organization, I know a lot of what I'd have to learn about other franchises, but if I look at that Colts roster, it's pretty loaded. I just need a quarterback, and they got a high pick.
Right.
Or if I look at a different situation, it might intrigue me more, and oh, maybe, just maybe, there still is some bad blood over the lawsuit. We don't know. So you may want him. The fans definitely want him. But he has to want you, too. And until we hear from him and we see how the interviews go, if he take, just like you said with Peyton, if he takes the second interview, if there's a second interview that and he's still in the process, then that tells you a lot more in terms of you don't know if it's his first choice or not, but he's definitely still interested in you.
Sure. Absolutely. He's willing to go further down the plan. I think that'd be a great sign. Now, the other side of it is Sean Payton. Sean Payton and this coaching search, and it looks like the ship has sailed. I don't know if we ever took it seriously there. We didn't want to give up the compensation for Sean Payton. But reports say that Sean Payton already has a second interview lined up with Denver this week. No mention of the Texans. And there's also been a little bit of an update to this from Benjamin Albright, who covers the NFL in Denver. He's a Broncos insider, so take that for what it's worth. Used to cover the NFL for NFL.com, I believe. He was doing like kind of a Q&A stuff, or maybe it was just somebody asked him a question on Twitter. I don't know. But he said, somebody asked, do you think Sean is out of the Texans gig? Benjamin Albright says, was never in on the Texans gig, to my knowledge. Didn't get an interview with Indy. Arizona wouldn't schedule one despite getting permission and went in a different direction for GM. Took Zoom interview with Houston to keep up the perception of a market outside of Denver, Colorado, or Denver, Carolina. So there's some thoughts there that, okay, well, he was just showing the interest in the Houston Texans because it drives up the market. And also, there was a report from Aaron Wilson, apparently, that since Peyton went on, didn't go on Colin Cowherd, but gave Colin Cowherd the information that he had a Zoom meeting with somebody, and that ownership
could be dinner dysfunctional.
Sure, yeah, at that place in L.A.
Yeah,
but a lot of people. Oh, he's not talking about. Yeah, he was talking about the Texans, and Aaron Wilson is saying that Peyton torpedoes his chances with Houston by bad mouthing the organization in front office to Colin Cowherd. So it seems like the Houston Texans are admitting that Colin Cowherd or that was talking about the Houston Texans, and that the Texans, because of that, soured on Sean Payton. I don't think that the Houston Texans were in a position to sour on Sean Payton, because I don't think Sean Payton was ever taking the Texans seriously, especially after he had the dinner with Colin Cowherd, where he called Houston Texans dysfunctional.
This was a PR stunt from a Texans perspective. This was a leverage situation from Sean Payton.
I think that there might have been some genuine interest before the first meeting.
I think that as much as everybody wants to overanalyze it, the big thing was, because we basically set you up for this. We said we thought the perfect spot for him was Denver.
Yeah.
And that's where he would end up. But we also know that in order to get the kind of outrageous money and kind of the power that he wants, you need to have competition so teams are willing to relent a little bit in certain things so that they can make sure they get their guy. I think that also from a Texans perspective, if there is any truth to what he said about knowing the ownership previously, he knows what a complete cluster this has been for the last several years. So he did the Texans a solid by meeting with them. Maybe the weather and being close to what he was used to in New Orleans and, you know, still staying in the South and knowing Texas like he does. Maybe that was intriguing enough for him to at least interview. And he knew in the process, hey, look, it's a good look for them. And it's actually a good move for me because now Denver knows there's at least one other team that really wants me. And then you let the process go from there. But we said all along, it wasn't the right fit at the right time. And we also didn't like the starting point of having to give up at least a number one pick somewhere. So for all those reasons and more, don't be upset or like cry over spilled milk if he is, you know, dead set on going to Denver. Just be happy that at least he talked to you before he talked to Colin Cowherd.
I think there's a chance that he was interested before he met with him.
Maybe.
I mean, at least to where he gave the Texans the opportunity to blow him out of the water, right? To blow the whole, like, the whole thing out of the water. Be like, look how great we are. And then, obviously, Sean Payton didn't feel that way. 713-780-ESPN, our HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. You mentioned a little bit earlier, are we wanting D'Amico Ryans for the wrong reasons? Let's dive into that. Also, what if D'Amico Ryans is Robert Saleh? Or would you be okay with that? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Do the Texans want D'Amico for all the wrong reasons? Are we overlooking some things because he's a Texan? You were on this last week, quite honestly, and I've seen some people start asking the question, dude, is D'Amico really the dude that we want? I think for the most part, he's still a very popular choice in Houston. He's probably the most popular choice in Houston. One of the things that you've been pointing to, and I've seen some more people talk about this, I've started to see it gain a little bit of traction here, Blankers. Defensive guy? Offensive guy. I think going into this coaching cycle, a lot of people wanted offense. D'Amico, the name, obviously, former Texan. Look, he's done great things in San Francisco. He looks the part, looks like a leader of men. We get all of those things. But is all of that blinding us to still going with a defensive guy over an offensive guy?
Yeah, look, that's something that, again, this has nothing to do with disparaging D'Amico in any way, shape, or form. It has everything to do with doing the right thing, making the right decision, and giving the right the next coach every chance to succeed because of the fact that they've screwed it up so royally the last two cycles. They couldn't have handled things much worse than they did over the last 2 years. When they went through everything that they went through, if there was some sort of a process, it got askew and it got completely off the rails in a quick amount of time. And since then, they've never been able to get it back. That's fine because you had Davis Mills. That's fine because you were dealing and wading through all the issues that you had with Deshaun and no quarterback and really no roster. But now the roster's starting to get better. You're seeing improvements. But more so than anything else, you're going to add a quarterback. You're probably going to add an offensive weapon or two around that quarterback. And that's why, because of the failures we've seen in recent history in the NFL with high quarterbacks taken and then having to have them run the gamut of a gauntlet of offensive coordinators and head coaches, and you look at what happened to Baker Mayfield, and you look at Sam Darnold, and you look at, I mean, to a lesser extent, but Josh Rosen. You look at a lot of guys taken very high as quarterbacks in the first round, and then when you give them multiple coaches, both at coordinator and head coach, it sets them back. Sometimes it could deter their whole career. On the flip side, if you get an offensive-minded head coach paired with a good offensive coordinator, you can set the kid up for success rather than failure and maybe fast-track him. Look no further than what happened to Trevor Lawrence. When he was with a complete idiot, he played like a complete idiot. When you get a true offensive-minded head coach and a coordinator with him that could help Trevor Lawrence, it was night and day. I know that the Texans need to not only hit this coach right, but they got to do everything that in their power to hit the quarterback right, and that, I think, would help them do that.
Look, D'Amico's my top choice when it comes to this. Now, getting the coaching staff right, obviously, it factors in. Vero was asking us earlier, does it bode well that the Texans apparently had a long interview with D'Amico Ryans? It can't hurt. It can't hurt, but it could also mean you're having some tough conversations, right? I don't think that there's any baggage carrying over from his lawsuit that he had on the field conditions in NRG. I really don't. I think if he was still bitter about that, he probably never has an interview. But there's probably tough conversations maybe about that, maybe about where the roster's at, maybe about Nick Caserio's influence, maybe about Cal McNair, his resume as the, you know, the pioneer of the Houston Texans since he took over is not great. So it's going, like, you should have a long conversation if there's interest there. And even if they're not the favorite, D'Amico Ryans, from his point of view, that he doesn't view the Texans as his favorite landing spot, it's still good to have those conversations. Here's something that I've thought about the last couple of days, Blankers. I'm curious your opinion. I'm curious the opinion of the Hive as well. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. A lot of similar things are being said right now about DeMeco Ryans than Robert Saleh, whenever he was, you know, a hot candidate out on the coaching carousel, went to the Jets. Deshaun Watson wanted the Texans to interview him. I don't believe he actually ever interviewed with the Texans. They never even, you know, took him seriously, and then they hired David Culley. But a lot of similar things have been said about DeMeco Ryans as Robert Saleh. He's, you know, the orchestrator behind a very good defense, calls a very good game. He's the San Francisco defensive coordinator. He's a leader of men. He's a leader that you want to have in your organization. All of those things. If you look at the numbers, too, that they produced defensively. Robert Saleh was a four-year defensive coordinator in San Francisco. His last 2 years, 2019, second-best defense in the NFL. 2020, the fifth-best defense in the NFL. DeMeco Ryans took over for Robert Saleh, which was already a very good defense. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of improvement. Whenever you're at the top, there's not really a place to go up. DeMeco's last 2 years, has only been the DC 2 years since Saleh left, third in defense in 21. They were the top defense in 2022. I see a lot of similarities in terms of their defensive coordinator prowess. I see a lot of similarities about their demeanor, their fire, their energy. And I see a lot of similarities about their strengths of being a leader for an organization. Saleh, of course, went to New York, had a rough first year. This year they were in contention for a little bit, had quarterback problems, and then faded down the stretch. If DeMeco Ryans is Robert Saleh, let's assume that he is Robert Saleh, would you be okay with that hire?
No. I wouldn't.
Really?
And I wouldn't because of the fact that this is exactly what I'm talking about when I'm talking about getting an offensive-minded head coach. For the most part, these defensive head coaches are always focused on the defense as they should be and in defensive meetings and making relationships with defensive coaches across the league and doing things that you see which is helps them to be successful whenever they're coaching defense. And that makes a ton of sense. But when you look at what Saleh did in New York, and look, LaFleur's little brother, who was basically a secondary coach. You know, he was one of the offensive assistants with the Niners. Well, you know what? When Saleh got the job, that was his OC. And now he was the scapegoat that got fired because Zach Wilson didn't pan out because their quarterback room was a mess. Now, whether he was unfairly scapegoated or whether he was deserving of that firing, it doesn't matter. You can't afford to make the same kind of mistake that Saleh made because you're dealing with a huge, massive point in time with the Texans franchise. And you can't afford to swing and miss on this. So you need a guy that's going to get you another, that's going to bring in an offensive guy. Been there, done that.
I mean, Saleh tried that. Now, Saleh missed. I mean,
I don't think LaFleur was ready to do that with a rookie quarterback.
I mean, it's going to be very similar to what DeMeco brings in.
That's like, what I'm saying. That's my hesitation with DeMeco.
Because DeMeco is going to bring in an offensive coordinator that, I mean, who knows if he has experience or not? And even if he does have experience, what good is that experience? Like, what if it's LaFleur? Like, it's experience that you're not too pleased with.
Right.
Or he's going to bring up a dude who's never called plays before. I've seen Kubiak's name being mentioned. I've seen
Clint Kubiak, too, I
Wes
believe,
Phillips,
has been thrown out there.
I can't remember.
Yeah, Wade's son.
Yeah, Wade's son, who's, I think, in Minnesota currently. I think he was actually the offensive coordinator in Minnesota this year, but didn't call plays.
Right.
So it's like not necessarily a lateral move, same position, offensive coordinator, but you're going from being a non-play caller to a play caller.
And that's where I don't like that kind of wiggle room that's sitting there of uncertainty.
And then also the Jets drafted a quarterback at number two, which right now if the Houston Texans are going to keep the number two pick, it is more likely than not that they select a quarterback. So there's a lot of similarities. Saleh's style.
Mm-hmm.
Saleh had a top-ranked defense in the NFL. Same tree, same organization. DeMeco leadership skills through the roof. Like, there's a lot of similarities there. And then you fast forward to the Jets. They brought in, you know, an unproven OC, which I think you have to. They drafted quarterback at number two behind a defensive-minded head coach. The Houston Texans are going to, like, if it is DeMeco Ryans, going to have to bring in an offensive coordinator, probably an unproven commodity. They're probably going to pick quarterback at number two. And then what? So there is some fear there.
The difference the Jets missed on their quarterback? If the Texans don't miss on their quarterback, I think a lot of the worries about the defensive head coach go away.
No, they don't, because, look, maybe who cares? My point being, BMAC, you may get the right guy, but if it's the wrong coach at the wrong time or he's not ready for prime time to be a coordinator and call plays and do things, he still sets that quarterback back no matter how talented he might be. And you could see the talent in Trevor Lawrence, and you know in 1 year's time if you get the wrong guys around him, no matter how talented he is, he may struggle mightily and set the franchise back. In the Texans case,
could we say that Zach Wilson was so bad that it didn't matter what offensive coordinator they stuck with?
But we could also say that the offensive prowess for that staff is so bad they couldn't elevate a talented quarterback. You go look at who's in the playoffs right now, to Blanker's point. Trevor Lawrence looked terrible as a rookie. He looked so bad Trevor Lawrence was a rookie. People thought Davis Mills was better than Trevor Lawrence. All of a sudden, yeah. He gets a real offensive coach, and he starts to shine. Not great, not perfect, but starts to shine. Pat Mahomes was the number 10 pick in the draft and has Andy Reid. Shines. Daniel Jones was garbage until this year, gets Brian Daboll. They shine. Jalen Hurts, huge progression with a Sirianni, with a Shane Steichen. Joe Burrow has an offensive-minded coach in Zach Taylor. The Buffalo Bills are the only team in this postseason, or the only team in the divisional round, that didn't have an offensive-minded coach and Sean McDermott. And a lot of people were saying that Josh Allen has taken a step backwards as a quarterback now that Brian Daboll is gone. Prescott with Mike McCarthy. Same thing in San Francisco. Look what's going on in San Francisco. You have an offensive-minded dude that's winning playoff games, two of them, with Mr. Irrelevant as a rookie.
Zach Wilson, maybe,
but offensive staff being not very good, potential as well.
I would have to think if there are more examples than this. I can't think off the top of my head, but obviously the Seahawks with Pete Carroll, defensive-minded head coach, went to two Super Bowls and won one with Russell Wilson taking a quarterback in the third round,
sure,
and developing him into, you know, at one time one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So I do think there is at least some recent history to prove that this could be done.
Wouldn't it also be fair to say with this discussion, you don't know what you don't know yet, and you can't make the final judgment on Zach Wilson until he goes somewhere else or he gets in another situation, because you got to like Trevor Lawrence.
Maybe, but sometimes you ruin a guy.
Yeah, right, I'm saying it. We've seen guys ruin, and I've rattled those guys off during this show. But again, if we want to look at just specifically the comparison, to really verify whether Saleh played a part in it and hiring LaFleur, and the fact that you had a defensive-minded head coach and a first-time, really, really raw offensive coordinator can set a guy back. You won't truly know that until Wilson goes somewhere else and sees if he truly doesn't have the talent that people thought and he was just a huge miss from a draft perspective, or if he goes somewhere else with a bunch of offensive-minded guys and he can actually perform better. Then you can say, well, that was probably a bad situation for him.
713-780-ESPN. If D'Amico Ryans is Robert Saleh, would you be okay with that? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What if D'Amico Ryans is Robert Saleh? I think it's a really good comparison. If I'm wrong, tell me. 713-780-ESPN. What does D'Amico Ryans have that Robert Saleh doesn't? Like, I understand that he's the hometown guy, right? Played for the Texans, was a fan favorite when he played for the Texans. Both great leaders whenever they're coming into the head coaching carousel. Both have been the DC for top-ranked defenses. Last 2 years under Robert Saleh, he finished in the top five, second and fifth in his final year. D'Amico in his first two seasons is DC, third and first, inheriting a really good defense that didn't need a whole lot of work. Both defensive-minded guys. Both are going to rely heavily on their offensive staff to develop the offensive side of the ball, and more importantly, quarterback. Robert Saleh, 2 years in New York. First year, not very good. Taking over a rebuild. Second year, started out pretty well, playing better football, and then that quarterback situation hit the fan, and they faded down the stretch. If D'Amico Ryans is Robert Saleh, do you want him to be the head coach? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's head out to the HRMP listener line for Louie. Louie, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to bring D'Amico on, because at the end of the day, defenses win championships, you know, and, you know, Brock Purdy is doing good, and they have a lot of great offensive weapons on that team, but they're not asking him to be Patrick Mahomes and make these impossible throws. They're just asking him to do enough with what he's got, because the defense is going to keep them in the game every time.
Sure. But is that because of D'Amico, or is that because of the talent they have defensively? And look, I think it's fair to say both. I think it's totally fair to say both. This isn't me, like, trying to talk down the candidacy of D'Amico Ryans. He's my top target. Now that Benny Johnson's out of the mix, I want D'Amico Ryans. It's not a guarantee, just like Ben Johnson wasn't a guarantee, just like Sean Payton's not a guarantee. No coach that you hire is a guarantee. The situation matters a whole lot.
Well, plus, you have less wiggle room than basically any other team looking for a coach.
Yeah, I would agree with that. With the basically the history that they had,
the swings
with
and misses and over the last 2 years. Yeah,
yeah, and Cal kind of referred to that too. Whenever he was talking on the Highway to Hell, it's like, yeah, well, you know, we have to have job security for our next head coach because we fired the last two in one season. So, like, I look at the San Francisco defensive position. Like, if I want to look at this in a vacuum, because I love DeMeco. Don't get my words twisted here. But when I look at San Francisco, DeMeco took over the defensive coordinator job with a very good roster already in place on the defensive side of the ball. What they're doing offensively, I think, is an anomaly because they have like dudes that can go get it, like Debo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey. And then what they do defensively, obviously, they have the top defense in the NFL, so they can win games with Brock Purdy at quarterback. I don't think that you're replicating that in Houston next year. You're not going to build a great defense overnight, and then in year one, you're winning games with Davis Mills. That's not going to happen. The Texans' defense is so far away, talent-wise, from being the San Francisco 49ers. DeMeco Ryans isn't going to take that defense from being 20-something in the league to top 10 in the league. It's going to take roster improvement on that side of the ball, and it's going to take a good mind on that side of the ball.
Yeah, no doubt. That's what I was getting at earlier when I said, okay, that's fine and dandy, right? Because Saleh got a ton of love, too, from basically that same roster. And then DeMeco just kind of, you know, plug and play, fill in for where Saleh left off. As long as he doesn't screw it up, right, they're capable. But if you look at the Texans, who's your Bosa? Who's your Fred Warner?
Jerry Hughes.
No. Who's your Fred Warner? Who's your Ward? You know, you look across the board, and the kid at safety is unbelievable, too. And you look at it, you go, okay, maybe Petrie can some, but he's not the same kind of player as the Niners safety is. But when you look at it overall, you go, you've got to have the players no matter how good of a defensive coach you are. Now, I heard Lance talking this morning, and Cincinnati's D coordinator saved and sat on a blitz package until the fourth quarter and then completely threw the Bills for a loop and put Josh Allen on his ass on multiple occasions. You still got to have the players to do that, yeah, because you could have the best scheme in the world and the idea to be able to sit on that to the fourth quarter. One, you got to be in the game in the fourth quarter. And two, you got to have guys that can execute the plan. When we said all season long, yeah, it's fair to rip Pep. But at the same time, when Pep doesn't have the kind of game pieces to play chess the way he wants to play, he has to play checkers. So these guys have all been good with the rosters that they currently have. And I hate to break it to you, if you aren't, as a newsflash, but the Texans roster ain't even close to any of these guys' rosters that are all in the playoffs. So don't expect the same kind of things. That's as simple as it can be.
Did I say something wrong? Dre saying, what pieces do the Texans have? King of Twitch is saying, bunch of question marks. Jeremy's delusional. I'm saying that the Texans aren't close to the 49ers. If I twisted that, that's my bad. The Texans roster on the defensive side of the football is not great. Like, they have some foundational pieces that need a lot of improvement. Jalen Petrie, I think, had a good rookie year, not an all-pro rookie year.
Well, he can tackle them.
And he missed that's debatable. That's debatable.
I'm talking about sheer numbers.
Volume tackle is great.
But missed tackles?
Exactly. Exactly. That's like, he needs improvement there. Now, to be fair to Jalen Petrie, he shouldn't be asked to make nearly 200 tackles in his rookie season, which means you need a better front seven. I think Christian Harris is a piece. I think Derek Stingley's a piece. Obviously, he needs improvement. And that's kind of it. If you want to believe Malik Collins is a piece, okay, I'll give that one to you, although he's a little bit older. And then you have, you know, do we think John Grenard's a piece? Doubt it. So I don't think that the Texans have many pieces defensively, and that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make. DeMeco Ryans would be going from the best talent roster on the defensive side of the ball to one of the worst defensive rosters on the defensive side of the ball with the Houston Texans. But if DeMeco Ryans is Robert Saleh, would you be okay with that? Because they're very, very similar coming out of San Francisco. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 0511, the Jets went 9-8 in a much tougher division with a bad quarterback. With the right quarterback selection, that would be a huge improvement. I'd take that if I were a Texans fan. Okay, now I think it's also fair to have the quarterback conversation. Is it because Zach Wilson was a total bust and the best offensive mind, Kyle Shanahan, couldn't have brought anything out of Zach Wilson? Or is the offensive situation in New York something that you would have to attribute some of the failures of Zach Wilson for? It's impossible to answer that question. It's going to be different for every person that tries to.
No, you're right. And again, it isn't a perfect science, but unfortunately, because of the Texans' past, it has to be more perfect than any other team that's in the market for a head coach. And that's why I have concerns. That's why a defensive-minded coach, and again, no slight on DeMeco, because I think from like leader of men perspective, CEO perspective, energy perspective, you know, been there, done that to get players to buy in. He's got all those things. My concern is that I want as much focus and coaching attention as I can possibly get on my quarterback, whoever they choose that to be. And that's the main thing that I would be concerned with. Other than that, I'm with you. I think from a leader of men CEO perspective, I think he's at the top of the list. I think because he has name recognition and likability in the city, he's at the top of the list. I think for all the other things that I said and the defensive side of things, he's at the top of the list. My concerns are all centered around those picks and at least one of them being offensive-minded and a quarterback. That's where I have reservation.
Is this a troll? 7225 says Roy Lopez, top four in the league.
That's ridiculous.
It's a troll. It's a troll. It's an admirable troll, 7225.
A year ago, you might have agreed with him.
Well, no, I wouldn't have. No, it was a fine.
You were on a Lopez kick.
I liked Lopez from the sense that he was a nice find in the sixth round as a niche player. 1509, I would be, hashtag B emoji, okay with D'Amico as head coach and Kingsbury as the OC. See what I did there. I did see what you did there. I don't think Cliff's interested in coaching in the NFL this year. Maybe he returns from this Thailand sabbatical in like 2 weeks and he changes his mind. I don't think Cliff wants to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL next year. I think he eventually will again be an OC in the NFL or at least come back to the NFL. But I think he's going to go sit on his money and enjoy a nice long vacation.
Look, I think a lot of times guys get burnt out.
And I don't think there's a connection there.
I think a lot of, you know, I think the guys get burnt out. I think they get stressed out. I think that a combination of things is a lot easier to deal with when it's all said and done. And in the process, you have a massive slush fund that you can play with. That's why you buy a one-way ticket to get the hell out of Dodge for a while to just kind of recharge the batteries. But when the time's right and he makes it known that he's back in the game, you're going to have colleges knocking on his door. You're going to have NFL teams knocking on his door. Now, are the NFL teams going to be knocking on the door for a head coach or an OC or both? I would say probably both. He's going to lean more towards another head coaching job because once I think you get there, you don't want to take a step back. But I think that if he was open to it on a really good roster of being the OC, I think he'd be foolish not to take it because he could make his stock that much higher the same way we've seen in this cycle. All these guys come to the top in terms of getting considered for jobs.
8755, what if Texans bring Kubiak in the building to help develop the new quarterback? Coming. He said Gary Kubiak. I would love that. He'd be my top choice for OC, but the reports are that he wants to stay retired, yep. Maybe an advisor or something like that, but not a game caller, which takes my top OC target for D'Amico Ryans off the board. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers, I don't think Brock Purdy's great, but I think he was the best quarterback in that football game yesterday. Good. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.